The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk, episode 449, to be broadcast on Wednesday, July 31st, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. I believe she's in the other room, but anyway, no big deal. If you're watching this on Facebook Live, you can comment down here below. I'll try to get back to you. Otherwise, you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week, another bump in the road, episode 3. Yeah, it's third time I've made an attempt at doing a show with the cervical collar on. This is not a very comfortable thing to be wearing all the time. And yes, I do have to wear it all the time. And so I'm going to rant about it until it comes off. Hopefully less than a week and a half away, and I'll no longer have to be utilizing this to help support my neck. I feel much stronger than I was in the past. So I think it's coming around. I'm doing some PT work with it, and hopefully things will get better. But anyway, and no, folks, anyone who is listening to the show or watching the show, please understand this was not a bicycle accident. It was simply a mom occurrence. Yeah, genetics caught up with me. My mom had terrible arthritis. And apparently it came to me in my neck, of all places. So anyway, much better now. Big shout out to the docs over at UConn Health. Really, really did a crazy, miraculous thing to my neck. And I'll give you more updates soon, but I am getting out. So in different ways. I'll talk about that on a positive side. I'll get there. Update. Okay, so City Bike in more rant here. City Bike in New York is being forced to slow down their e-bikes by the illustrious Mayor Adams because they think that they're too dangerous at higher speeds. And Lyft is caving into pressure from Mayor Adams. Here comes the rant. What about big motorized vehicles? Okay, so we're attacking the little motorized vehicles, the bicycles, the people that are doing all the work, people that are delivering the food, the people that are transporting important documents around the city, the people that are just commuting on their bikes because they don't want to get into a car anymore and congest the roads, the people that are paying attention to 2025 and being responsible by riding their bikes, right? But then we've got these big motorized vehicles, and they don't clamp down on them like they clamp down on bicycles. That's my rant. I'll stop there. Let's not discriminate against bicycles. I'll have a little more of that in the show. Positive side, the tour is over. Sad but true. I know. It's sort of a positive side, sort of a eh. But what a great Tour de France. Man, it was great. There were some outstanding performances in this year's Tour de France. Albeit that, Tadej Pogačar is a true monster on a bike, and he is to be a force to be reckoned with. And he's not done yet. He's 26 years old. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch, I gotta say. The only positive side of having to wear a cervical collar for this entire time and recovering from a major surgery is that I got to watch a tour every day. That was great. That was really good. And I got to watch it live every day, which was really fun too. So big shout out to the tour. Lots and lots of fun. What else can I tell you on a positive side? Greg LeMond. Remember Greg LeMond? Anyone remember Greg LeMond? My son, Greg Meniza, is named after Greg LeMond. Yeah, we kind of chose that name. It was Greg LeMond was very hot at that time. It was 1989. He was winning the Tour de France. My son was born on July 9th. You know, kind of all fit in. But anyway, I'm a bike person. So Greg LeMond, from a bike commuter to a cycling legend, awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. It's a watershed moment for advocates and policymakers alike to promote biking and bike safety. Yeah, there we go. We'll talk a little more about that in the show. The fastest tour ever? Looked like it. Boy, oh boy, were they flying. I got to tell you, it's to watch the speed at which some of these riders were going this year. It was just incredible, incredible. They were finishing some stages up to 15 minutes before the projected times. It's incredible. It's a young group. They're a lot faster. Things are a lot faster. Bikes are faster. Technology is different. We won't go off on the deep edge with and talk about anything else as to why this may be occurring. I try to hope that my sport is still clean. That's all I can say. Other quiet corner, bicycle tour was yesterday. Yeah, another positive side. And despite the weather, and we did have lots of threatening weather and a pretty hard downpour of showers, a band of showers that came through early in the morning, we still had a bunch of people show up and went out and rode in the Quiet Corner Bike Tour put on by the Thread City Cyclers of Northeastern Connecticut. And big shout out to Dave Wahlberger, who has been the event director on that for the last few years. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. Yeah, Neck Chronicles. So I have that on my positive side too. It's getting better, folks. It really is getting better. And it's getting to the point where I'm actually feeling like I can get out and do a little bit more. I did stand around a little bit too much yesterday and suffered the consequences last night because everything gets pretty weak and tired by the end of the day. But this is getting better, and my legs are coming back. And I actually got out last week. And I went to my local community center where I normally teach. Still not teaching yet. Still waiting on that one. And I was able to hop onto their recumbent bicycles that they have up there. Nice little unit. Works really good. And you get to be in a seated position, which is far more comfortable on my neck than sitting on a bicycle at this time. But I'll get there. But I did get in 3 hours on the recumbent bike last week. So I'm pretty psyched about that. And on the other end of that, I am also fairly alarmed at what 30 days of not riding a bicycle can do to you. Especially when you're, 39 like I am. Not really. 31 years of worth of experience on top of that. But anyway, it certainly felt good to sweat. It felt good to breathe hard. It felt good to watch my heart rate go up into zone 4 and not feel like it was the end of the world. Boy, things are just getting better. I can climb stairs better now. I've just got a lot more power in the legs than I used to have. Now I just have to condition it and get it back up there again, get my cardiovascular system working again. You take a month off, and if you're as active as I am, and I know a lot of my listeners are, a month is a long time, and you definitely feel that down the road. So anyway, I'm going to keep working at it this week. Maybe I'll get in 4 days this week or 4 hours this week instead of 3 hours. Slow, incremental improvements, they go a long way. So I'll just keep working on it, and I will continue to report back as to how this crazy bridge work that I have in my neck is working. And I'm feeling very, very positive about it. So I think it's going to go well. But I am only 4.5 weeks out, almost 5 weeks. Actually, tomorrow will be 5 weeks since the initial surgery. Whew, wow. It's quite a trip. Anyway, that's the last of my positive side. I'm going to go on to the mechanical minute and Ron's tips of the week. And this one came, all these ideas are inspired by things I see while either being on my bicycle or, let's say, being at an event like I was yesterday. and this woman was having some trouble with her bike because she said, I put these new tires on and they're really, really nice tires. I like them a lot. But she said, I feel like I'm riding down a bumpy road all the time. Well, why was that? Here it is. She had an improper tire seat. So the tire wasn't seating all the way on one side. So the tire was actually dropping down and making it feel like she was on a bumpy road. I'm sure others out there have experienced this. And what do you do about it? Well, you go to the internet and you take a look and you see what others have to say. So, seating stubborn bike tires. Back in the day when I had my bicycle shop, we used to have a lovely tool which was, they were called tire pliers. And what they would do is you could actually grab onto the tire with these. They're sort of like a channel lock plier, and you could grab onto that tire and you could pull on it as you were inflating it, and you could get it to pop up and seat in a specific area. But there are problems that occur when you're trying to seat a tire, and so I found this neat little article here under a tech talk at Road Bike Rider of 7 ways to seat stubborn bike tires, because some of them just don't want to seat. And I will say that I have had certain tires and certain rim combinations that just don't get along well with one another. You know, it's kind of like when you put two different political parties in the same room at the same time and they have very strong opinions. And that's just a time thing here. So there is that possibility that you'll never get it to work. I'm not gonna say that anybody can fix this, because you just really don't know. But if you don't know what it means to seat a tire, I can explain that to you really simply. It's the final step taken when you're installing most tires on bicycles, and you want to make sure that the bead of the tire fits into the hook of the rim. And sometimes it just doesn't want to go there, and you have to give it some help. And it ensures that your inflated tire is fully and properly installed. Tires aren't properly seated. They have low and or high spots or twists in the tread. With the worst seating mistakes, some high spots can actually even blow off the rim. So a lot of times people will not install their tube correctly, and if they get that tube underneath the bead, it will definitely rise up and won't be seated right, and then you'll hear a very loud kaboom because it'll blow off the rim. So it's really important when you're installing your tire to give the wheel a spin, take a look. Don't put all the pressure in the tire yet. Take a look, make sure everything looks even all the way around. And, if it's just down below that little hooked seat section on the rim, you're gonna have some trouble. So you need to work on this. So you'll feel a low spot every time you're rolling your bike down the road, and it'll feel like bump, 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 and just it feels like you're riding on a bumpy road. This woman was having some trouble, and one of our techs was there working on it, and he was trying a few different things to see if he could get it to seat, but there are some tricks. So roll the tire. 7 seating tricks. Roll the tire out with your hands. Do not put massive force on the wheel in doing this move, but you could, because you could actually bend the wheel if you're like a major brute, I would guess. I never had that problem. But anyway, don't put massive lateral force on the wheel when doing this move, but you do need to kind of grip the tire and pull with it. The quickest and safest way to seat a tire most of the time, once you're good at it. And if you have a few times, you might learn to do it a little better, but it really, you got to get a real strong grip. So you get these great forearms from being a bike mechanic, because you're grabbing onto that tire and really twisting and pulling on it. So if you could do that, yay, good for you. You've been doing this for a while and you understand what it's like to seat a tire. But if you can't do that because this tire just will not cooperate with you, there are some other things you can do. You could also do it with air pressure. You can put an excessive amount of air pressure into the tire. I usually was at the bike shop. We used a compressor to do this so that it wasn't overly difficult on, you know, putting out too much physical effort to pump up the tire. But and then you have to watch really carefully and make sure that tire seats in place. When it seats, you'll hear it actually pop or click when it goes into place. So air pressure is another way of doing it, but you got to be super careful that you're not going to blow the tire off the rim. Most of the tires are rated on the side of the tire, and it will tell you what the PSI is rated at, and you should not exceed that. But you can, I can tell you, if you're having a difficult seated tire problem, you can exceed that number because the ratings are actually almost double what or half of what the real amount of pressure that tire can take before it will explode off the rim. Very, very careful here. Wear ear protection if you're doing this. I'll tell you why, because if you've ever had a tire blow up while you're trying to do this or blow off the rim, your ears are going to be ringing for a day or two. It makes a lot of noise and you're very close proximity to it. So you do need to be super careful when you're doing this. So the air pressure trick actually works, but again, needs and requires a lot of care and management while you're doing it. Soap. Okay, here's a way that you can do. You take a little bit of soap. I find like a liquid soap is usually pretty good in this case because it's just easy to apply. I am really, really cautious about what soap I would use, like a dishwashing soap. Not so much. I'd be a little careful about that because, believe it or not, folks, a lot of dishwashing soaps, one in particular that begins with a D, are petroleum based, and they have a little bit of petroleum base in them to help cut grease, and that petroleum base getting on your rubber tire is not such a good thing. It may cause a problem with the tire in the future. So I would try to find some sort of a soap that is non-petroleum based. You could use a bar of soap, a dry bar of soap, and just rub it on the area that you're trying to get it to seat. And that might help, just makes it a little bit slipperier. And so that's a possibility. You know, if you take a look at, I grew up in a garage. My dad had he had an automobile garage, and that's where I learned a lot about mechanics, and I learned a lot about cars and other various things from my dad. But one of my jobs when I got old enough to be able to handle that responsibility was to mount and dismount tires. So we had a piece of equipment that would hold the rim down and the tire down onto this piece of equipment, and then we could put essentially a tire lever like you would have with your car. You could put it in there and you could, you know, peel it all the way around and out. But every time we did that, my dad had a little bucket that had a soapy water solution in it, and we would whisk that around the tire and around the rim, and it would just help make it seat easier and better. So a little bit of soap goes a long way. So if you have a particular spot which is causing the problem, you need to deflate the tire and you need to take the soap and put it in that particular area. And it works pretty good. Another thing that you can use, which works and I think is a fairly easy application too, is a lot of bike mechanics will use like a talc or a talcum powder or something like that, baby powder, whatever you want to call it. Be careful because you don't want to be inhaling that because it's not good for you. But you can use that, and that will also make that tire and tube and everything a lot slipperier, so it may help you seat. That's another option that you have as far as that goes. You could also use alcohol, but I'm not as big a fan of that as I am. The soap, I think, is still a better idea. And sometimes, and this is just sometimes, the tire will eventually seat itself, but don't depend on that because it doesn't always happen. And like this, if you were out on a 40-mile ride like this woman was, she got to go bump, 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 bump the whole way and was not satisfied with that ride. So, if you get stuck, here's a big one. Where am I going to send you? To your local bike shop. They know how to do this. They deal with this. They know what happens when they have a problematic bead and tire seating problem. And so your local bike shop is your best resource for this sort of thing. Okay, now let's go on down to the tire pliers here and see if we, yep, there they are. Tire seating pliers. I knew they'd have a set of those. Like I said, they look kind of like a channel lock plier, but they have a kind of curved metal piece on them that kind of wraps around the tire so it doesn't dig into the rubber and damage the tire or the sidewall in any way. And when you put those on there, you can kind of wiggle back and forth while applying pressure from air pressure, like your pump or whatever. And sometimes you can get it to pop into place. You'll actually hear a very distinct pop when you get the bead to sit where it's supposed to be. Then you spin the wheel, you make sure everything looks safe, looks even on both sides, make sure nothing's riding up too high. Too high is definitely a bigger concern than too low. But too low is just going to make it an uncomfortable ride. So, once you have seated your tire and you've got it all set, recheck your air pressure because you know how I am about air pressure and tires. I tend to ride a little bit more on the low side. I like a comfortable ride and I like a little wider tire to be able to absorb that pressure and still give you an ability to ride without getting a flat. So anyway, tire seating pliers, they're made by a tool company that has been in the bicycle industry for years. It's Park Tool. They're a great little tool. I'm sure there are other manufacturers that make them too, but the one that we used in my bike shop was a Park Tool. And so it worked really, really good. For decades we were using these things. And people would come in and go, "What is that for?" And I would explain to them what we did with it. And they were pretty surprised to see that that would be a thing. Okay, here's the last one. And this one, again, you have to be super careful on this because you do not want to A, grab onto the rim when you're using this mechanism, and B, you want to make sure it's got a soft jaw on it, but a vise will also work in this situation because you have the leverage of the size of the wheel and you can pull back and forth on it and wiggle back and forth while the vise itself is grabbing onto the tire. But be really, really careful and make sure you're not damaging the sidewall of the tire while you're doing this. So you tighten it up just enough to hold the tire, never allow the rim to go between the jaws, and then you gently rock the wheel back and forth so the vise can tug the tire and get the low spots to pop out. And that is basically how to seat a trouble tire. It's a tire that's giving you some trouble. So there are a number of methods out there of which to do it. Many of them are, well, n a number of them that I mentioned, you have to use great care with because of you don't want to do damage to either your tire, your rim, or yourself. So it is always best to be cautious when doing this. And that's my mechanical tip of the week. All right, we're going to move on into the show and shut this off. Big shout out here to Road Bike Rider for that explanation. Okay, next thing, as we go into the show, where are we going to go here? What was the first thing on my list? Greg LeMond. Greg LeMond. You remember Greg LeMond, right? Greg LeMond was probably the very first of the really famous US riders to really make it in the world of cycling here in the United States. He was, I believe, from Nevada, if I remember correctly. Maybe it's on this in this article. And he rode for, what was it, De La Santa? There was a kind of a bike guru out there who was, you know, grooming and bringing people into the bike racing world. And I would have to look up that and find out. I don't have the history exactly, but I think I remember him wearing a jersey in his amateur years that said De La Santa on it, or something like that. So he has become the first cyclist to ever be awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. His journey to that monumental achievement, though, began back when he was just a kid on a bike. If he hadn't had safe places to ride back then, he might never have become the athlete Congress celebrated just recently. 2 weeks ago, actually, this is a little bit longer ago than that, at a ceremony at the U.S. Capitol, Lamond was given the Congressional Gold Medal in recognition of his contribution to the nation as an athlete, activist, role model, and community leader, as well as his advocacy against doping in the sport. Yes, I will say that Greg Lamond was on the one of the number one names on the Lance Armstrong hit list when Lance decided to sue everyone who said anything nasty about him. And sorry about that, a little interruption there. Yeah, Greg Lamond was very, very active in the late 80s, early 90s, had a very sordid career because of a terrible hunting accident that happened while he and his uncle were out hunting. And, you know, it kind of took him off his bike for a little while. But he was the only American to ever win the Tour de France, and he did it three times. So three-time Tour de France champion, and I believe the last time he won it, he had a lot of lead left in his body from that hunting accident. He and his uncle were out bird hunting, I believe, and that's when it happened. He's become a point of national pride for the thrilling performances in some of his most widely watched races in history, credited with creating his generation's breakaway culture for the ability to race ahead of the pack. The journey to cycling's most vaunted podiums, though, began back when Lamond got his first bike at 14, when he was still living in Washoe Valley of Nevada, near Lake Tahoe. Initially interested in skiing, cycling didn't appeal to the teenage Lamond as an athlete. Rather, the bicycle was a tool of mobility and independence, especially given the remoteness of the area where he had lived. Lamond did want a bike at that time, did not want a bike at that time, said Richard Moore in a 2011 book of Slaying the Badger, but that was because of his isolation and three-mile commute to his nearest school friends. It had nothing to do with the sport. That's how I got into it. I my friends lived 3 to 5 miles away from me across town, and I grew up in a small town, but in order to get to where a lot of my friends lived, I had to go across town, and we didn't have mom in a minivan or an SUV or whatever it is that the kids get transported by these days. We just rode our bikes there, that's all. And I'd tell my mom, I'm going over to, you know, to Larry's house. And she go, okay, well, where's that? And I go, yeah, he lives over in Christie Hills, or that was the town I grew up in, was Ledyard. And she go, well, that's a long ways. That's okay, Mom. I'll be back before dark. And, you know, that's the way the culture was back then. That's what we did. We rode our bikes everywhere. My dad would call home, and he would say, I won't say what he said because my dad swore like a sailor, but he used to call me Ronnie, and he would get your you-know-what over here. Get on your bike and pedal your you-know-what over here. And so I would ride my bicycle to his service station, and I would help him with work when he'd get behind. And I started doing that when I was 12 years old. So Greg Lamond did the same thing. He used his bike for transportation. Nice, huh? Independence, transportation, physical fitness. How many good things can we say about cycling? A lot. I have lists and lists and lists of reasons why you should ride a bike. But anyway, he grew up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and there's even a loop out there now that's dubbed the Le Monde Loop by cyclists. Nearly 80 miles it runs long. It runs through mountain highways, but also on urban roadways of Reno and Carson City. And I can tell you, I climbed up the Carson City Pass when I was going riding my bicycle across the country, and that is that's a heck of a climb. It's really steep, it's really nasty. Throw 30-35 pounds worth of panniers and sleeping bags and tents on, and it's even worse than that. But anyway, that's where he rode, that's where he grew up, that's where he quote unquote trained. But he was really into cross-country skiing. That was more his thing. And he actually would, that was his winter training regime. He would not ride the bike in the winter, and he would cross-country ski. So that was kind of a cool thing. And that, of course, piqued my interest in cross-country skiing too, because I really think cross-country skiing is, it's really an ultimate sport. Cycling also is an ultimate sport and can be performed by almost anyone, but the cross-country skiing works your cardio and your VO2 like you've never experienced before, because you're using even more of your body than you're using when you're cycling. A lot of upper body work there too. So anyway, this was a bipartisan effort to pass the legislation that gave Le Monde the honor, which is one of the most prestigious civilian awards and highest expressions of national appreciation for distinguished achievements and contributions given by Congress. So good. So the reality for cyclists is, you know, we still have roads that we have to use in order to do our training and or riding and or commuting and or whatever we do on our bikes. And it's been, we've had some rough years, and the Federal Highway Administration reports that around 1,000 cycling fatalities and 42,000 injuries every year. It's a tough thing to do, to go out and ride your bike on the road, and we've lost good friends to it, and it happens, and it's just, you know, it's part of riding a bike, unfortunately. We would love to see changes here, and maybe, you know, maybe Greg will have some sort of a platform here that he can work with after getting this really prestigious award. So at the ceremony, representatives in both sides of the aisle acknowledged how bikes can open the world to even the youngest riders, even if lawmakers don't always come together to pass policies to support them. Most of us probably remember our first taste of freedom as kids while riding our bikes, said Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. But of course, our first rude awakening when the pavement reminded us that we weren't invincible. Yeah, I've slept pavement a few times. Maybe that's where this came from. Not sure. They said it wasn't cycling, but anyway, not sure. Everybody looks at me and go, oh my God, did you have an accident? No, I didn't have an accident. I just had a mom. That's all. So anyway, hey, big shout out to Greg Le Monde. I've been a fan of his for years. He's a really nice guy. I've met him. He's a really nice guy. And you know, the amount of abuse that he took during the Armstrong scandal was just unbelievably wrong in so many ways. The amount of abuse that others took during that, you know, Floyd Landis and Tyler Hamilton and the Andreos. I mean, I could do a whole show on it, but I won't. I'm going to leave it alone. Totally going to leave it alone. And I'm going to continue to not support and watch Mr. Armstrong and his podcast. Sorry. But anyway, let's move on to another subject here. This one is, and I will get to the Tour de France. I promise you I will get to the Tour de France, because this year's Tour de France was wow. It was wow. It was definitely a good one. This year's Giro was a wow. All the bike racing is just, it's really come to light. Interesting, I'm going to sidebar on this just for a second. My cousin called me to check in on me to see if I was doing okay. My cousin Jeff is about 8 months younger than I am. And so we've stayed pretty tight and in touch for a long time. He still lives in Connecticut. I still live in Connecticut. And he called. He was checking in because he knew I had had the surgery and wanted to know how I was doing. So we chatted and chatted and chatted for a while. And then he said something about, so at least you get to watch the Tour de France and your recovery. And I said, yeah, I've been watching it every day. It's been great. And he goes on to spout off names and information from this year's tour and previous past. I said, Jeff, you actually watched this? I mean, this is my cousin who he was a football player, baseball player. You know, I just never saw him as interested in cycling. And he not only knew, you know, who was winning the Tour de France, he knew how to pronounce his name correctly. He was just like, he said, I've been watching this for a number of years now. He said, I'm fascinated by it. He said, it's so much fun. It's really, really exciting. So there you go. I mean, you just never know who's watching. And that popularity is going to make our whole cycling presence safer. It really will, because people will have more of an appreciation for people who are out there riding on the roads. So hang in there, folks. It's going to get better. It has gotten better. It's gotten a lot better. Unfortunately, we still have other things that we deal with, which brings me to my next subject and where I was headed before I went off on that cousin Jeff tangent. What will it take to automatically brick drivers' cell phones behind the wheel? Yeah, this is from our good friend Kia Wilson over at Streets Blog. She hits all the great subjects, I gotta say. So that's a shout out. If you read Streets Blog, Kia is a big transportation advocate and writes some really good stuff. So anyway, technology to stop cell phone use behind the wheel has existed for years. Why are so few drivers using it, and why aren't lawmakers making them use it? There we go. Don't you take away my cell phone. Not while I'm driving. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Anyway, we're moving forward here. There's a couple of things you do not touch. Well, a few things in this country, unfortunately, that you do not touch. One being firearms, which I still don't understand the Wild West and cowboy attitude of this country, but that's beside the point. And hey, if you hate me and never listen to my podcast again, oh well, sorry. This is my opinion. I do get hate mail. It's all true. When I got my first when I got my first one, the director up at the radio station said, congratulations, you made it. He said, once you have someone who complains about you, you get to know that more than just your fans are listening. So that's a good thing. But anyway, corporations and regulators that oversee them must do more to stop distracted driving. And finally, bricking the devices when their users are behind the wheel. Wouldn't it be great if you couldn't use your cell phone while you're behind the wheel, unless you voice activated and that was it? There was no way you could look at the phone, no way you would need to look at the phone. Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? The National Transportation Safety Board recently called on federal regulators to develop new anti-distracting guidelines so that cell phone manufacturers, automakers, and other aftermarket companies that put diverting devices inside American cars could have no excuse to make do not disturb while driving modes a default on all of their products. Yeah, boy, that would be nice. That recommendation was prompted by a grisly 2023 crash in which 17-year-old Wisconsin driver who was texting behind the wheel struck and killed a 13-year-old, an avid hockey player who was in the process of boarding her school bus. Virtually every cell phone has an in-motion lockout mechanism that bars the driver from using at least its most distracting features like calling, text messages, social media, email apps, and some even still allow limited access to navigation, music, and emergency calls. Telematics companies that help insurers assess who deserves a safe driving discount, and those apps are installed on countless phones, also brag that they can even sense whether a phone is being held by a driver or a passenger passed on minuscule differences about how people manipulate their devices and whether they're behind the wheel or just enjoying the ride. Because lockout tech isn't always on default, though. Only about 20% of surveyed cold phone users had the lockout set to activate automatically if they drive, according to a 2020 study that Insurance Institute for the Highway Safety conducted. If regulators can enshrine those life-saving technologies into clear federal recommendations, though, it could be an important final step to making lockout systems mandatory on all phones, not to mention dashboard infotainment system screens and other aftermarket electronic devices that might take your eyes off the road. But the fight almost certainly won't be easy. The National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration did publish a distraction guidelines back in 2013, but those guidelines haven't been updated since. 2013, where are we? It's 2025, folks. Jeez. Anyway, and those guidelines only talked about the visual and manual distractions of the screens, not the cognitive distraction hangover that can linger for up to a minute after a motorist puts the phone down. 2013. Think about the technology back in 2013. Think about the technology now that you have on your little mini computer that you carry around in your pocket all the time. Right now, I'm recording this show on one. And it's like, you know, the it's light years ahead of 2013. We haven't looked at this since 2013. Hello? Anybody paying attention here? So the NHTSA studies cited that an estimated 6.4% of drivers were actively using their devices during daylight hours in 2022, and phones were identified as a distracting factor in a stunning 64,979 crashes in 2023. 64,000, that's almost 65,000 crashes caused by cell phone usage, or they were on the cell phone at the time. And because police don't understand the subpoena cell phone records after crashes, the NTSB itself can only investigate a tiny fraction of roadway tragedies. Those numbers are almost certainly significantly an undercount, given U.S. residents the false impression that it's okay to take an occasional call on the road. People don't truly understand the risks. It's also thought that it's challenging to determine the distraction was caused in a crash. We have so many fatalities on our roadways, and there are so many other factors that also involve that sometimes it can be hard to choose which ones to focus on. So let's see here. Distraction time slow. Drink drive limit 12%, 21% use cannabis, 27% hands-free phone, 30% Android Auto voice device, 35% texting, 36% Apple CarPlay voice, 46% handheld phone, 53% Android Auto touch, 57% Apple CarPlay Touch. So this chart shows the percentage of increase in distracted drivers' response times. An undistracted driver typically reacts in about 1 second. Ooh, boy, oh boy. So this is an epidemic. This is a problem. You drink three beers or you text on your phone? Which one is more dangerous? Well, guess what? They're both just equally as dangerous. And yet, if you drink three beers, you're probably going to get a DUI, but you're not going to get any kind of a charge against you for using your cell phone, because we haven't really established this right yet. So anyway, cell phone usage and driving your car, it's a big rant of mine. It'll always be a big rant of mine. I just, I am as guilty of it as any of us out there. I certainly have and still do use my cell phone while I drive. I do not pick it up if I just don't pick it up. I use the voice activated controls in my car. They're much improved over the years. It definitely makes a difference. I can tell my phone to text or call someone and send that out without ever taking my eyes off the road. But once again, if I'm not taking my eyes off the road, but I'm paying attention to the cell phone to do the things I want it to do, am I taking my attention off the road? So this is a big question mark, and it's a really big question mark because I believe that there have probably been a number of cyclists and pedestrians that have been hit when the driver of the motorized vehicle is in use on a cell phone. But I don't have numbers, but we have good guesses out there as to how it works. And 65,000 is a pretty big number, I would say. That's a pretty, and that's what we know of. Okay, that is what we know of. So yeah, cell phones, big problem, big problem. We need to do something about it. Distracted driving is certainly something that it happens very quickly, and all of a sudden you look up and there's the pedestrian, there's the cyclist right in front of you. I think it happens more often than you realize. So I would really like to see something done about it. And thank you, Kia, for writing that article, because it really kind of opens our eyes a little bit more. The fact that we haven't had any kind of legislative change or investigation since 2013 is extremely disturbing. So anyway, let's move on. Yeah, I made this little, I talked a little bit about this in my rant that that City Bike is going to, they have to slow down their bikes, and Lyft has to slow down their bikes in New York City to 15 miles per hour, but we're not talking or addressing the cars. What's wrong with us? Why are we so screwed up here? If we could simply lower the speeds of motorized vehicles in city situations. What do I say about city situations? Any place is a crosswalk. That's a city situation as far as I'm concerned. There's a crosswalk there. That crosswalk there is for a reason. Crosswalk is there because someone tried to cross the road and wasn't able to do it safely, so they put a crosswalk in and signage to go along with it. Why is the speed still 40 miles an hour if there's a crosswalk there? Just answer the question. That's all I want to hear. Answer the question. All crosswalk speed areas, if I were king, because apparently kings are a thing now. We're supposed to have kings running our country. So, whoop, I said it. Yep, you're probably going to discount me and discontinue me, and I'll just join the pile with Stephen Colbert. Anyway, if I were king, if there's a crosswalk, it's 20 miles an hour, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. At worst case, 25 miles per hour. But if you're going faster than that, and you're in an area where there's crosswalks, you're going way too fast. And that also is an area that you will also see people on bicycles, because people are transporting themselves either by foot or by bicycle. Now, this applies, you guys out there, you speed demons out there that are out to beat the latest Strava segment, all right, that applies to you too. If there's a crosswalk and there's a pedestrian in the crosswalk, guess what? You are a vehicle and you have to stop. So, you know, it goes in both ways. So anyway, let's slow the cars down. I like the idea, let's slow the cars down, better than I like the idea, let's slow the bikes down. I say, let's get the bikes up to the speed that the cars could go at, at the recommended speed of, let's say, 20 or 25 miles per hour in an urban setting like that. And everybody will be safer. This isn't rocket science, folks. This is common sense. But, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, and I don't have a degree in common sense. I just have it. Okay. Anyway, let's move forward. more things on my list here, and I'm going to run out. And you know what I'm going to do is I am going to run out before I get to what everyone is talking about here, and that is going to be the Tour de France. So I'm going to jump forward. I'm going to highlight this to remember to do it next week, because I have a method of which I do this, and we're going to do this. There we go. Okay, Tour de France 2025. Pogacar wins again. Four times, folks, four times. The gentleman is 26 years old. I'll let you figure this one out. At 26 years of age, if you have won the Tour de France four times. And as the riders get older and more developed and get a little smarter and maybe lose a little bit of speed but start riding with more of a racing mindset, guess what? We've seen successful Tour de France Grand Tour riders, Vuelta riders, Giro riders, successful up to as late as 34, 35 years in age. So what's in the future? We don't know. Is Tadej Pogacar going to become the GOAT? No, Eddie still has it. Eddie still has it. But guess what, Eddie? Somebody is breathing down your records with you can feel the breath on the back of your neck. Of course, you're not wearing a cervical collar, so you could feel a lot of things on the back of your neck. No problem. Anyway, so yeah, Tadej Pogacar is a phenomenon. He is just an incredible rider. He is so competitive. I used to say that the world's most competitive man is a friend of mine by the name of John Hankins, but I believe Tadej Pogacar has him beat. And now that I've disclosed that, John is going to now disprove that. That's how competitive he is. No, I'm just kidding. He's a buddy of mine that we've been riding bicycles and running together for years. And so anyway, I always used to kid him about, I said, John, you are the world's most competitive man. No, Tadej Pogacar is the world's most competitive man. He cannot let it go. Almost to a point of annoyance where, you know, there were some definitely mano a mano, you know, man against man on some of these climbs. And Tadej could not lose. He just couldn't let it happen. No matter whether the other rider was apparently much stronger or not, he's just got this competitive nature to him. It's fairly amazing. So he wins the Tour, and my favorite, and something that I had predicted, I had said it to a couple of my friends. I said, you know who I want to see win the last Tour de France this year, the stage 21, the last tour stage, is I think that they changed the course. First of all, it changed it a lot. It wasn't a parade around the Champs-Élysées multiple times and then a big sprint finish. It required them to go up and over some pretty serious hills, and so I kind of like the change. I mean, it was always fun to watch the big sprint at the end and all, but gosh, it was also always like a crash fest, it seemed. And just too much speed, too fast, and craziness. Although this tour certainly had enough of its crashes, for sure. But anyway, I said it a day before the stage started. I said, it's going to be Wout van Aert. Wout van Aert is going to go for stage 21, and he deserves it because he's Wout van Aert. He's just, again, very competitive, very solid rider. And of course, what adds to making Wout van Aert really good at being able to win a stage like that? Cobblestones and rain, baby. Cobblestones and rain. Yep, that did it. It was not an easy place to go fast, and Wout's a cyclocross guy. You know how much I love cyclocross. You know how passionate I am about cyclocross. I'll talk about that in a few minutes because I am out of time. Actually, I'm completely out of time. So Pogačar was third in the Vuelta a España when he was 20 years old, and then he won the Tour de France in 2020. He was the youngest winner of the Tour de France since 1904. He's a champion who wins from February to October, a champion who can win the classics, challenge Matthew Vanderpoel and Paris-Roubaix, and dominate in the Pyrenean stages of the Tour against Jonas Vingegaard. Unbelievable. It was a great tour. We're going to be talking about it for a little while. And now we have the Tour de Femme. So yeah, we're not done yet. We are definitely not done yet. So I know it's not even August yet, but guess what? It's event time. And the Project Mayhem Cyclocross is coming up. It's a 7-race series here in Connecticut. My race at Mansfield Hollow is a part of that. I think I am the third of the series of seven, and that will be coming up on October 11th. So that's part of it. Sunday, September 21st is the 9th annual Tour Apocum bike land ride for land conservation up in Massachusetts, just a very short distance from here. So some very beautiful roads up there. Yeah. This is it. It's all, here's what's happening. Summer is kind of coming closer to an end. I know it's not even August yet, or it will be August by the time you hear this broadcast, but we got more summer to come. But, you know, winter is coming up quick, and we've got a lot of changes ahead, and hopefully, I will be back out on my bicycle and get to experience some of the nice weather before it completely deteriorates. So that's my hope and dream. And all I can say is, I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, lack of places to safely ride your bike, and do your part. Make a stand. Get noisy here. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your motorized vehicle one day a week and just use your bike instead. You're just going to surprise yourself. I know you are. And remember, whether you're riding a bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. It's done it twice for me now. Amazing. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!